Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Filmcast After Dark, the after show for the Filmcast, where we talk about a variety of random topics that didn't make it into the show. I'm David Chen. Joining me, as usual, is Devinder Hardwar and Jeff Cannata. But this episode is a special one because every year on the Summer Movie Wager, we commit to the winner being able to choose a piece of media under 3 hours long that everyone else will watch. Well, if you remember, last year's winner was, unfortunately, Peter Serretta, who continues his reign of terror over the Filmcast for yet another year.
The fun thing about doing the result like this, whatever you want to call it. The fun thing about doing it this late is that Peter can feel like a loser while he feels like a winner.
well. Also, you know what's also great about this is the pain of watching whatever Peter chose is going to be fresh in the mind of whoever's the winner.
That's right.
And that can inform whatever the next choice is. Anyway, so today on The After Dark, we are going to be watching and discussing what Peter Serretta asked us to discuss. And of course, in order to do that, we needed to have some guests back on. Peter Serretta is the co-founder of the Ordinary Adventures YouTube channel. Peter, welcome back to the Filmcast.
I'm happy to be here today, Dave.
Joining us also, she didn't have to do this, especially after her recent extreme surgery, but we are so grateful to welcome BJ Colangelo back to the Filmcast. BJ, thanks for joining us today.
I am happy to be back to the Filmcast. After watching this movie, I sort of wish I was still in recovery.
I just want to say BJ's here and she had surgery. What's Jermaine's excuse?
That's a good question. Yeah. Good question. BJ recently had every single tooth extracted from her mouth, which was only the second most painful experience she endured this month, apparently.
True that. Anyway,
we are so glad. We're so glad to have everyone back here today to discuss the movie that Peter Serretta wanted us to watch and talk about, Penn and Teller Get Killed.
Do what you want to the girl, but leave me alone.
I've always been a sucker for classy Euro trash and sunglasses.
That was a trailer from Penn and Teller Get Killed. And I do want to point out that this conversation will have spoilers for the movie right from the jump. So if you ever wanted to watch Penn and Teller Get Killed, maybe don't. But if you still do, watch it first before you listen to our conversation about it. I do also just want to point out, by the way, spoilers for David Fincher's The Game coming up in this review. I'm just going to throw that out there. All right. Peter Serretta, why did you choose this movie as your winning movie for the Summer Movie Wager last year?
Well, I think I said this in the results, but I previously suggested a movie that I thought you guys would enjoy, and no one seemed to, a lot of you guys seemed to like.
I enjoy Go. I like Go.
So I was like, you know what?
I love Go.
That. I'm going to choose something that I enjoy, but I know others probably won't. So I chose Penn and Teller Get Killed. This is a movie I discovered in the 90s as a fan of magic and as a fan of Penn and Teller. They are a subversive magic duo. And this movie is strange. First of all, it's directed by Arthur Penn. It's his last film.
Yeah. Yeah. No relation.
Yeah, no relation at all.
His last name and that guy's first name are not related. Right. Is that what you're trying to say? Yeah.
I'm just saying. I was like, are they connected somehow? No, they're not related.
But Arthur Penn, the director of Bonnie and Clyde, the director of Night Moves, made this piece of shit.
His last movie.
Incredible.
Who did he owe money to? How did this happen?
Yeah.
Apparently, he loved Penn and Teller and wanted to make a movie. I don't know. But the funny thing, quick aside, guys, I know we are in time limit, but Quentin Tarantino, who notoriously is only going to make 10 films in his life because he doesn't want to go out as a filmmaker who, at the end of his life, is like making crappy movies, always cites Penn and Teller Get Killed as a metaphor of, quote, how crummy most of new Hollywood directors' last films were. So basically he will use this as an example. Anyways,
it's strongest legacy is what you just said, probably. But anyway, go ahead.
Another aside, I want to complain that this was a theatrical film, but like I'm sure most people out there watching it saw it as 4:3 because they cut it down for TV, and then it's not available in widescreen anymore. Except
they lost the side bits somewhere, so they misplaced the side bits.
They were just like, we don't care. Like normally in an older release, they would go try to find the widescreen like source, but they won't. Yeah. You can get the widescreen DVD printed if you want it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
What do they have to dust off his research? That? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, Peter. Why do you like Penn and Teller Get Killed?
First of all, I love Penn and Teller. So seeing them do their subversive magic comedy, like dark comedy kind of stuff in a movie is fun. The whole practical. So I guess if you haven't seen the movie, the premise of this movie is Penn goes on a talk show and says it would be fun if someone was trying to kill him. And someone actually hears that and is trying to kill him. And it's mostly him and Teller doing practical jokes back to each other.
And let me just elaborate, right? The movie is like, this is like a fictional satirical version of what Penn and Teller's lives are like when they're not performing publicly, right? It's kind of like what you imagine their lives are like. You know,
it feels like Penn and Teller doing the Blues Brothers.
Yeah. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It has some of their
best magic bits too in there. Like it opens with this bit that they did on Saturday Night Live where they're hanging upside down and it's such a crazy bit because like the joke is mostly for the in studio audience and not the people watching at home, which is the majority of the people. Anyways, this movie is aggressively strange. It's tonally hostile. It's, I think the thing I like the most about it like I feel like now it's not as big of a thing, but in the 90s the way this movie ends was unlike any you would never see a movie where good guys die, the bad guys win. Like it just never happened back then. Like it was just not a thing. And the way this movie ends, apparently Warner Brothers, who greenlit the movie, they test screened it. The test screenings
they
were
also
horrible.
Picked up a gun and were like, bang.
I don't know why they greenlit the movie without knowing the ending, but they apparently hated the ending and they refused to change the ending. So I think the ending is the best part of this. But anyways, I'm excited to hear you guys talk about this movie.
All right, well, let's hear from BJ Colangelo. And I do want to just mention, I didn't plug BJ's stuff before we got into it. So I want to mention she's lead evening news editor at slashfilm.com. And you should check out her podcast, This Ends at Prom, wherever your podcast can be found. BJ, what did you think of Penn and Teller Get Killed?
So your listeners know that I tend to like, I'm an easy mark. I like a lot of things. I tend to look for the positive. This was a struggle for me because I'm of two minds about it. One mind is that this movie feels actually very in line with the original Meet the Parents, not the Meet the Parents with De Niro and Ben Stiller, the one that Universal has buried so that people don't know it exists because it ends with like, Greg's sister-in-law killing herself and blaming him for it. Like insane, dark 90s comedy. And I really like that. I really respect it. I have an affinity for comedies that are pre-9/11 and pre-Columbine that take these very dark, violent swings. And then the other mind that I have is that this is one of the worst movies I've ever seen. And so juggling those two is difficult.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly, I would say, the worst movie that has been a summer movie wager, you know, recommended film. And I got Gods of Egypt in that mix there. Okay, well, you know, people don't agree. Devendra Hardwar, what did you think of Penn and Teller Get Killed?
I mean, I thought it was kind of an interesting flashback at first, where I was like, oh, man, this is so 80s. You could just walk right into the airport. Very minimal security. Like, it felt like such a lovely flashback. Also to the way people were like crowded around the TV watching late night TV. It felt like a really interesting time capsule. And I think what happened is that immediately it became clear this movie is not funny. This movie has no idea what it's doing. Penn, I think, is aggressively unlikable in this movie. Like, I just want to punch him in the face. And I forgot what these guys, I forgot what he looked like when he had a full head of hair, and I guess he really flaunted it. So I guess karma came back at him in the late 90s, because what I remember is not the same Penn. But yeah, this movie, it is just baffling. And then when I saw there was freaking Arthur Penn, who at least has a handful of classics to his name, made this piece of shit. It made me really sad. It made me genuinely sad for many things. And yeah, it's no wonder it's only available in 4x3, right? It's like, this, nobody gave a shit. Once this movie was like, the studio had this, we have this copy of the movie. We're not going to do any extra work to find a widescreen copy, because who the hell cares?
The Arthur Penn component of it is truly haunting, because not since Martin Brest directed Geely, right? And then never made another film. Like, these people,
and
like,
Geely's not that bad. It's not this bad.
It's not as bad as this. And these are people that were like at the height of Hollywood, at the height of their powers, made movies that influenced millions of people, created countless careers.
They're in film textbooks.
And then
textbooks.
You can direct a bad movie,
and
then that's it for you. Like, that's what this movie, I think, shows, along with Geely. Jeff Cannata, your thoughts on Penn and Teller Get Killed?
Like Peter, I am a huge fan of magic, and I'm a huge fan of Penn and Teller. This movie made me think less of them, but only slightly. I am actually going to defend it a little bit, because you guys are being so harsh on this movie. I think it isn't really a movie. It's a series of sketches. And some of them are fun and some of them are not. And, you know, I do think it's some very young guys who have have a little bit of juice and are going to spend it. And I think the most brazen sort of self-destructive way you can. And I really respect that. There's something about this movie that is a giant middle finger to even the concept of a movie. And sure, I think it's intentionally, I think Peter described it well. It is intentionally aggressive and intentionally weird. And there are some bits that really are funny. Just the audacity of having a movie about two people and one of them doesn't speak is pretty wild. Like, Penn does all of the dialogue, like he does in his stage shows, but it's different when it's in a movie and there's like scenes between two people and he just has to do all the heavy lifting. It's a wild thing. I think the movie gets hijacked by its plot in the latter sections in a way that is not fun. Like, the first third of the movie is basically just them doing fun bits, and some of the bits I think are great, and I was along with it, and then it sort of gets really off the rails into this notion of you know, who these killers are and are they going to get them, and you know, all that stuff. I will tell you, the late Caitlin Clark, sadly she's no longer with us, but she's sort of the third prong in their trio.
She's tremendous. Yeah.
I don't know if you guys had this experience. I did not know that was her in the wig.
Same.
I thought, I was like shocked when she pulled the wig off. Shocked that, like, it was literally like everybody would know that was Superman. He's just wearing glasses, you know? And then I was like, oh, a tiny change to a person can make me think they're a completely different person.
Right.
I literally was shocked. I was like, that's her? What? And that was kind of a neat moment for me. But I didn't think the end worked. It's so surreal and so weird and so out there, and I kept just feeling like, isn't all the blood rushing to your head? This makes me uncomfortable. Peter, was this the first time that Teller had spoken on camera in any way, or do you know?
I think so. I believe this is the first time he's spoken on camera. By the way, I want to say that this is definitely the worst the movie that they've been a part of.
Yeah, there's some good ones.
They also made Tim Vermeer and Aristocrats,
right?
Which are both incredible movies, which I think all of you would love. But I did not choose those movies.
Well, and I even brought this up in our email a couple years ago. Penn starred in an Adam Rifkin movie. Teller's also in it, called Director's Cut, that is a horror comedy where Penn Jillette kidnaps Missy Pyle because he's an angry like Kickstarter backer and is like, I didn't get what I wanted from Kickstarter, so I'm going to kidnap this actress, that I find like darkly funny. There's like a lot of comedic DNA between both of those movies, but that movie works for me and this movie doesn't. I respect this movie more than I enjoy this movie. Like, this is a movie that I can't in good faith recommend to somebody unless, one, they're doing a completionist kind of thing with Arthur Penn's filmography, or if I'm like, I need you to see this oddity because I just need to pass it on like it's a cursed videotape in The Ring.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very much cursed. It is funny how like similar things to this were done in the 90s, right? I just got the 4K for Wayne's World in it, like, as a package. Perfect movie. I grew up with that movie, and I think like very similar concept of two weird guys kind of going on an adventure
Blues
together.
Brothers.
Blues Brothers, Beavis and Butthead to America. I got a lot of those vibes too, which is a great movie, despite the name.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a kind. I mean, even there's even little overlap between this and Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Oh, yeah.
It's like it's these odd people who are sort of placed in the real world and don't really fit there. You know, like one of my favorite moments is, you know, they come out of the ocean and pull off their ocean suits and they have the full Penn and Teller red tie,
like James Bond,
three-piece suit thing underneath. It's like that to me is a very Pee-wee Herman thing. That's a very like a Blues. It's that mentality of like, these characters are only these characters no matter where you put them in this universe. And there's something like, there's a commitment to the bit here that I have to admire on a certain level. You know, they're kind of, you know, aggressively, you know, at this time, I think they were really a lot more committed to like the blood and guts side of, you know, he calls themselves the bad boys of comedy in the movie. And I think that's kind of what they were doing. And there's a great moment where he's like, you know, we're the bad boys of comedy, but we would never willingly show how a trick is done. Cut to literally them showing how the trick was done.
Right.
It's great. I mean, there's stuff in here that's good. It's not all bad.
Couple brief thoughts on it. I do admire some components of the movie. I like the fact that Teller doesn't speak. And you really... he's talked about why he doesn't speak, and there's something like really special about the fact that he's been able to maintain that persona. By the way, huge fan of Penn and Teller, and I've paid to see their show multiple times. Like, I think they're incredible, and having a movie with Teller in it and he's the second lead and he doesn't speak, I do think is really audacious. And the movie does creative ways of having Teller communicate, right? He has to use his facial expressions. The movie will put an insert shot to show like what Teller is looking at. And like, it has to like do different filmmaking tricks to make Teller a main character in the movie, which I thought was kind of clever. Having said that, I do think that the big downside for me is the Penn Jillette character. To me, this felt like a skit that you would do in as part of a magic show.
Mm-hmm.
Stretched out to 85 minutes. It's like, hey, like, oh, during a magic show, it's cute. Like, everything has this kind of heightened reality and people are acting in really stilted ways, but you stretch that out to a movie length and it doesn't quite work. And I also think that what's interesting about Penn is he is playing a character that I think is extremely similar to who he is as a person. And I thought that that persona was much more successful in the Showtime original series, Penn and Teller's Bullshit, where like it's a documentary series where they kind of investigate things like, you know, astrology or whatever. And they're like, that's bullshit. And he has this really smug way of looking at the world and talking about things that is great when you're debunking people like, you know, psychics who are doing cold readings on vulnerable people. But it is deathly to, you know, playing a protagonist that you actually want to root for. But
you're also comparing things that are 25 years apart in their creation. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like he has that persona, so to speak, or, you know, his stage presence, his act has matured for decades between the two. This is such an early glimpse at their shtick. And I think that's an evolution that you're kind of describing.
I actually don't agree with you. I think what I'm trying to say is I think the persona is quite similar. And if it's in one context and medium, it works really well, and transplanted into a narrative fiction film, it's terrible. That is my supposition. I don't think like the pen in Penn and Teller's bullshit is like dramatically different than the one that you see here.
That's what I'm trying to tell you is like I don't think that he makes this movie today. Sorry, go ahead, Peter.
Oh yeah,
I agree with.
That's because that shows an immaturity, I think.
Yeah. Oh yeah, there's definitely immaturity here, but I definitely think this is a more exaggerated version of this character that he plays the show.
For sure.
I think it's louder, it's more obnoxious, it's confrontational, it's selfish, and I feel like you would never see that. You would never see the selfishness in bullshit. Or, do you know what I mean?
Hmm. Yeah, and there's a that weird sort of like antagonism between Penn and Teller. Is something that completely dropped out of their act. That's not, there's like a love. The only thing they express between each other in the last 30 years has been this sort of affection for each other. And in this movie, there's this weird kind of rivalry and hatred.
That's true.
Off-putting.
I will say that despite the fact that tonally, I really couldn't stand this film for reasons I've already discussed, I have to admire the audacity of the ending, right? The ending is a real fuck you to audiences, to the studio. It's like anti-movie in some way. I think you kind of said this, Jeff, right? It's almost like an anti-ending. It is an ending that is so incredibly bleak and dark, and therefore cuts against so much of the tone of the rest of the film, that I have to admire that they just really went for it.
I love the voiceover in that moment, because it's like they could have just panned and gone out and like, you know, panned back further from Earth or whatever. But there's him being like, no, we're not going to heaven. We killed her, you know, like all that stuff. It's like it is like there's no cheating it at all. I feel like there's no softening that blow.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't enjoy that part because that's literally the smug attitude I was describing in like that. That, again, worked really well in bullshit and, in my opinion, annoyed me greatly here. But, yeah, I mean, and by the way, I wonder if David Fincher's The Game took any inspiration from this movie, because both movies have, as their climactic sequence, somebody realize, like, somebody playing a huge elaborate game on another character and then not realizing that a gun had come into the game from an outside source before it's fired and tragically kills someone. So I was just like, wow, real David Fincher's The Game vibes from the end of this film. Anyway,
where I do think this has similarities to bullshit and some of their later career stuff is this through line that I think has been consistent with them. You know, like the early part of this movie has a real agenda. It's like, hey, we're going to debunk some shit. You know, like we hate these psychic healers. The guy who comes up with the Bible, and it's like, you know, Penn's an avowed atheist, and these things that are, I think, consistent throughout their career of like, don't get finagled by these guys. Magic is fun and it should be fun, but it's not real. And I think that's, you know, something I've always very much respected about them is that position too.
Go ahead.
I was going to say lots of things don't play in modern times in this movie. And I think it was BJ that mentioned like the stuff at the airport, but like there's a guy outside promoting Jesus, but he has a gun in his Bible outside the airport. That would never happen today. Threatening airport security. There's them wanting to play Trump casinos.
A lot of Trump references.
Were they like, did they have some deal with do a residency at the Trump Tower or something like that?
I think they were just filming outside the Trump Casino at in Atlantic City. So I think it's probably part of the deal. I'm guessing right. He was like, if you film here, you need to put yeah, I'm guessing.
Say my name 17 times.
I do think that per what you're saying, Jeff, this is a movie that I feel like sums up a lot of their sensibility. And obviously it was a snapshot in time of what their sensibility was, but many of those things have endured. The, hey, like, we're going to actually explain stuff to you. We're like, believes in atheism and, you know, don't believe in psychic healers or pseudoscience. And by the way, we're going to end with a big way that like subverts your expectations and makes you feel like, wow, that was really dark and unexpected. You know, that's how I feel a lot watching their act. And so this movie, even though I didn't really enjoy the experience of watching it, it does like sum up who they are. And we should all get an opportunity to make a movie that like sums up who we are as people. You know what I mean? That would be nice.
There's a youthful anger to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's very angry.
There's a lot of anger in this. Yeah. Just Penn, the way he shouts everything just feels like, buddy, relax.
BJ, go ahead. What are you going to say?
Yeah, I was going to say there is so much anger to it. And this is where I think the Arthur Penn director choice becomes very interesting, because when the movie ended, all I could think about is, man, I want to do like a side-by-side analysis of the ending of Bonnie and Clyde and the ending of this, and like what they're saying about like cinematic violence and our expectations and what we have grown to expect from that movie to this movie and how that's changed, and how dare this piece of shit make me think like that.
Wow. Wow. I'm feeling like you guys are coming around to the movie a little bit, BJ and Devendra. That's kind of what I'm since I'm getting.
No, absolutely not.
Peter Serena, anything else you want to highlight about Penn and Teller Get Killed?
I love the quirky, jazzy, synthesized, very 80s score to it. There's some glimpses of Arthur Penn's genius. Like some of the framing, like there's this one shot near at the very end where when Teller finally kills himself and the camera is focused on the television that's recording him, and he shoots himself and his hand falls down, and the hand falls down in front of the camera and focuses to the, and I don't know, I feel like that stuff that you see nowadays a lot, but back then that was such a clever shot.
The shot in the movie that impressed me the most was when the serial killer guy straps the shoes onto Teller and then hoists him up onto the thing. And then, like, there's a camera watching from the other direction. But, like, that guy couldn't have hoisted, you know, Teller's probably over 150 pounds. Like, how did he get him up there? There's some kind of trick that they use to do that. And that was, like, completely seamless the way they did that. So I was
the most impressive thing in this movie, though, is early on both Penn and Teller do the sort of flip off of the upside down thing on their own. It's like, whoa, okay, they can do that. That's something. And also shout out to David Patrick Kelly for always being a weirdo and everything. Pretty good weirdo here. Yeah,
dude, there's so many interesting cameos in the, I mean, they're not even played as cameos. They're just people that show up in this movie,
right?
You know, like, obviously their good friend, the amazing Randy, is just some guy in the early part of this movie. But, you know, John Cryer is in this for 4 seconds. Mm-hmm. The playwright Christopher Durang is in this movie. I probably just friends that they had. There's all kinds of weird, you know, people that just show up.
Tom Sizemore.
Did you notice Tom Sizemore in this movie? Yeah.
What was he doing? What was his character?
He was a mugger.
He was just a random mugger.
Amazing.
You didn't know that? You didn't. He, super young Tom Sizemore is like,
no.
You know, pulls a gun on him. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyone else have anything else they want to share about Penn and Teller Get Killed?
We can't keep letting Peter get away with this. That's
all I have. Okay, I do want to give a shout out to the way the final sequence unfolds. And in particular, like all that dialogue of those people walking up the stairs to the apartment.
The cops are hilarious.
Yeah. Yes. Like
it's very
the guy,
Monty Python.
You know, describing how good the acting job was, and then getting there, and you realize, oh, this actually would look very bad if people really found it like this.
But
right?
I love the cops walking up to you. Yeah. Like it's a very, very much Monty Python, pile on the same joke.
Right, right. Yeah. Like they're just like stretching the same joke out to the breaking point, which I really, really appreciated.
And Caitlin Clark, like, pirouettes out the window, just flies,
we never see
swords.
Her body.
Yeah. I don't know what happens to her.
Yeah,
she just flies away.
It's like a question. Good question. BJ, any closing thoughts about Penn and Teller Get Killed?
I kind of want to watch it again, and I don't know what that says about me. Have I lost my mind? So there's that, but also I keep thinking about Penn and Teller's influence. I don't think we get Jay and Silent Bob's movie without this movie. Like, to prove that you can have a movie with one guy who talks way too much and one guy who doesn't talk at all. And you know what? That's a good legacy to have.
Yeah.
Well said.
Yeah. Two big legacies, Jay and Silent Bob, and also Quentin Tarantino being afraid to make another movie.
I like the premise at the beginning, and they abandon this completely, but the premise at the beginning seems to be like, what if you could just use magic to get through your life? You know, what if you just had these particular set of skills and they just, you could just use them, you know, like the way they get through the toll booth at the, you know, with the car and like all the cool stuff that mostly Teller does to deal with people. I wish that had been the whole movie. I wish that was the you know, defining principle of the whole movie, is like, look, if you are these guys, look how you could sort of scam your way through reality. But it just kind of aborts that mission halfway through and gets really sidetracked with this whole like people are going to kill you idea.
I think you're absolutely right, Jeff. We must think about how much this movie influenced Dave's favorite franchise.
That's right.
Now you see me. Now you see me.
That's right, Dave. You should love this.
You should love this.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things I did appreciate about the film is a lot of the magic was done in camera, right? Like, unlike Now You See Me, which is why I hate that franchise. A lot of, like this is a thing that they understood back then. David Copperfield and Penn and Teller, they all understood back then. You need to not cut from the shot, like that. There's a magic. The opening trick, right from the opening trick, it's like the magic is not cutting away from the shot. That is like, and we can do stuff around the frame that tricks you and stuff like that. That's fine, but like what you're seeing in camera is fundamentally real, and there's something really special about that. I think that movies like Now You See Me do not respect at all. So huge bummer there.
Yeah, anyway. But those are that's a successful franchise. It's made a lot of money. What happened to this movie?
It's almost like sometimes the things that are better don't do better.
I mean, you know, these guys went on to make a lot of money.
I will say that some of my favorite parts of this movie are the bits that like really are so inconsequential to the plot of the movie. I love the reporter asking. Before the reporter asks Teller like what he hates about magic, and he's just like all of a sudden just does like this old school magic routine with like flowers and stuff like that.
Yeah, that was
like,
nice.
Like he has that prepared just in case someone asks him that question. These guys, like, I just love you are right that they have evolved over the years. I love the 90s version of them, that they were so very subversive. Like, maybe Jeff knows about this, but they came out with this video game called Desert Bus. Have you heard about this, Jeff?
I have not.
It was a Sega CD game, and it was during the early 90s when it was like video games are violent and whatever. They need to be more realistic. So the entire premise was like awful on purpose. And this is the premise of Desert Bus. You're driving the bus for Penn and Teller from Arizona to Las Vegas. The trip takes 8 actual hours in real time. The bus tops out at 45 miles an hour, and there's basically nothing to see on the way, and you can't pause. The bus constantly drifts to the right, so you can't just hold down the accelerator.
This was a legendary game. Yeah.
If you make the full 8-hour drive, your reward is 1 point. And then if you want, you could turn around and drive another 8 hours back for another point. And the game was so cool because like if you drive off the road, the bus gets stuck. And instead of instantly like resetting and you respawn back at the beginning, no, you get towed back in real time to the beginning of the thing. So you have to wait to restart the game. But people play this online like in marathons, like raise money for charities and stuff like that.
It's
like,
so it's ahead of its time. I mean, yeah, because yeah. that's the, absolutely. There's indie games that do this now on purpose. You know, I mean, yeah. obviously that was on purpose too, but there's a whole vibrant world of games like that that sort of just torture the player.
Yeah. But there's something edgelordy about them, right? And their philosophy. And that's what this is. Like, let's make it bad on purpose. That's hilarious. That's kind of the through line of this movie.
Indeed.
For a bit.
Indeed.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Peter, you definitely expanded our horizons with this one, and we do appreciate that. So, and I want to thank
our you're welcome.
I want to thank our guests for joining us today, and whoever is the winner of the Summer Movie Wager, if they are among us, please just remember this and maybe choose something a little better for next year. You know, that's it's up to you. Have the power. You know,
the problem is that revenge against Peter has a lot of collateral damage.
Perhaps there are many people that deserve revenge. So, you know. Perhaps.
Anyway, Peter Serretta is the co-creator of the Ordinary Adventures YouTube channel. Check it out. Peter Serretta, thanks for chatting with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And BJ Colangelo is the lead evening news editor at SlashFilm.com and the co-host of This Ends at Prom, wherever your podcast can be found. BJ Colangelo, thanks for chatting with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a joy.
Next week on the podcast, it's going to be Tony will be our main review on the main film cast. Until then, we will see you later.